I really did enjoy it, and I loved the drama of a courtroom. I loved being in a courtroom. I was a trial lawyer.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential.
Walter Bennett is a writer, former lawyer, law professor, and judge. While practicing law, he valued the art of storytelling. In 2012, he published his first novel, Leaving Tuscaloosa, which won the Alabama Authors Award and was a finalist for the Penn Bellwether Prize for Socially Engaged Fiction and the Crook's Corner Book Prize for debut novels set in the American South. His most recent novel, The Last First Kiss, is a love story also set in the South.
I am here with Walter Bennett, author of The Last First Kiss and Leaving Tuscaloosa. And I am so excited to talk to Walter because he has, first of all, I have to admit, Walter, I was very nervous about talking to you because I've never talked to a former judge before.
Oh, okay.
So I was, I was telling, excuse me, I was talking to a friend yesterday. I said, I'm so nervous because I've never had a conversation with a former judge, but I'm excited that you're here. And I was looking at your website before we talked, and interesting, it sounds like your love of storytelling started on your grandparents' farm in Virginia, growing up, listening to your family tell stories. Is this where your passion for storytelling began?
I guess that's right. I guess it is a passion, but it's more like a sort of an instinct, a natural thing to do. And I think because people around me were doing it at the time and it was just part of life, I sort of picked it up, I don't know, as a habit or as that's the way you lived and talked to other people. So I think that's sort of how it began. Yeah.
So Walter, it seems like your career interest when you became older or old enough to choose a career was leaning toward law, obviously. What came first, like the interest in writing or the interest in law?
I think the interest in storytelling came first, and also the interest in writing. When I was in college, I was an English major. I read all the great white European writers, and I really wanted to be a writer, but I thought, I don't have the talent to do that. I'm not a genius, so it's not an option. So I didn't even, the idea of developing a craft and learning to write never occurred to me. I thought you were born with genius or you weren't. And so,
yeah.
So I didn't pursue it. And I needed to make a living also, and law seemed a better option.
Right. And that's so interesting because you grew up around these, it sounds like, really great storytellers who were telling stories of the Civil War. I know you mentioned on your side, and just, your family, all the interesting characters in your family. And I can relate because I have great storytellers in my family also. But when it comes to the thought of taking those stories that are passed down orally and writing them down, that just seems like a totally different ball game. And I can remember thinking as a kid, I'm around these great storytellers, but I don't know if I could write. That just seems like a totally different skill set. And it kind of is in a way, but it's just interesting how you can just doubt yourself as a storyteller because you doubt your writing skills.
Yeah, it's really interesting you make that connection. And it is another step. And I'm not sure where the impulse came to write it on paper. Mm-hmm. I guess it may be, in my case, it may be an ego thing. You tell a story to your friends or someone else or family members, but somewhere back in your head when you write, you think there's a wider audience out there, maybe.
Right.
Or you fantasize that there may be. And so maybe that's where that came from. Yeah.
And did some of the doubt come from maybe what teachers told you, like in high school or junior high or elementary, about your writing? Did you feel like a competent writer as a student?
I thought I was when I was in grammar school and high school, I guess, because I wasn't doing a lot of writing, but I was doing some because nobody else much around me was. When I got to college, I found out how uneducated I was, and how I wasn't illiterate, but I wasn't very literate. And so I really had to buckle down there and really learn to write in some way that other people could understand.
Yeah. That's so interesting, Walter, because growing up in elementary school and high school, I thought I was a really fabulous writer because I was always getting high marks. And then when I got to college and I took one of my first English courses and I turned in an essay, I got a C-, and I was devastated. And I remember going to the professor's office to talk to her, and I realized that I really wasn't a great writer like I thought I was in high school or, in elementary school. So really my education started in college also.
Yeah. I think that's true for a lot of us. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And I admire so much people who are self-taught, didn't go to college like we did, or and just wrote out of high school. I mean, Ernest Hemingway is an example. It's sort of phenomenal that somebody can do that.
Right. And did you express to your family that you had an interest in writing? And because I know a lot of artists, when they express to their families that they want to be artists, it's like, well, what are you going to do with that? There's no money in that.
Right. I don't recall. A lot of my family were teachers, so they wouldn't have discouraged it. But there also was this idea, you need to find a gainful employment. And I suspect they would have thought that writing did not fit in that category. Yeah.
So you went to law school.
Well, I went to English graduate school first. My first idea was to become an English teacher, a college English professor. Mm-hmm. And I was in English graduate school for a year, got a master's, and then began to see how hard the job market was. And that English in graduate school was real work. It wasn't just fun like it was in college. And I thought, well, law school can't be any worse than this.
Okay.
and I can make a living there. So I went that's what got me into law school.
And
economics.
Say that again.
I said it was economics as much as anything else to get me into a occupation that could earn a living at the time.
And did you enjoy being a lawyer, Walter?
Yes and no. It was hard work for me, a lot of it, but I really did enjoy it. And I loved the drama of a courtroom. I loved being in a courtroom. I was a trial lawyer. It's just such an incredible place. It's a stage. It's an arena where great decisions are made and important decisions, and personalities play out and characters play out. And I didn't realize it so much at the time, or didn't appreciate it, but it's stories. I mean, the whole thing is drama and stories. And it's stories with real consequences. I mean, what happens there, but the people's lives that come into court, it's stories again. I love that part of it.
I think we can the general public, we can understand how much storytelling is involved in just the area of law, because there are so many films and television shows that are based on the lives of lawyers or take place in courtrooms or have courtroom scenes in them. When you think about it, it's just, it's very prominent.
Yeah.
So how then did you decide to become a judge?
Well, that also probably was an economic decision. When I was a lawyer, I was doing a lot of civil rights work, and that did not, back in those days, that didn't pay much if you were on the civil rights side of things. And I did that for a while, but at some point I decided I needed a steady income, and it was not happening that way. I mean, I was making a living, but it was not very steady. And so opportunity came to run for judge, and I did, and got appointed to a judgeship. So that was basic. It wasn't any sort of, you know, career move other than that.
And when did you start to write fiction? Did you start to write fiction when you were practicing law?
You know, I think I was mostly trying to write poetry then. I didn't have a lot of time to write fiction. Some lawyers were able to do that. I was not one of them. I did write some poetry then, which wasn't very good. But I think I had a real yearn then to write fiction because all these stories that were going on around me.
And that's so interesting. The poetry, was that more of like a cathartic release, or was it just something you enjoyed?
Yeah, well, I enjoyed it, but you're right. It was cathartic, and it was a release, and it was an escape, I think, into the things I loved when I was in college, you know, reading literature, and definitely try to get back to those. The thoughts and feelings.
Go on.
Well, you know, legal work is a very linear, rational occupation, and you really have to stay focused in a very linear way. And poetry and fiction writing too are not that way at all. You have to have some sort of a linear ability to make changes and criticize and have something that's coherent, but you really are opening your mind then to let in all sorts of other things and not trying to narrow your thinking. So it's a very different, in that way, very different, and was a release and escape, I think, yeah.
I mean, especially you talk about nonlinear poetry. Oh my gosh. Such an abstract. It's so abstract. Yes. But I think it's great practice because it really teaches you how to be economical with words. Like with poetry, every word needs to count, and you can't, you know, to have excess words, it kind of just defeats the purpose of poetry. But it's a wonderful art to really practice.
Yes, absolutely.
So tell me about publishing your first novel. Was that Leaving Tuscaloosa?
That's right.
Okay. So when did you actually start to write that book?
I suspect I started to write that book in high school in my head.
Yeah.
The story in that book stuck with me, and it went over and over in my mind through my life as I got older. And it was like if I was really going to write something, I had to start with that story and write that story, and then maybe I could go move on to something else. It really was there. In sort of a burned-in way, because when I grew up in the Tuscaloosa in the Deep South in the 50s and 60s, the civil rights fight that was going on for civil rights was red hot, and incredible things were happening, frightening things that really, really stuck with me. And I think it really affected my outlook on the world and sort of my emotional outlook at that time. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of that lodged in there, and it had to be dealt with or at least addressed in some way. And I did it by telling the story. Before I could sort of get out of that and start to think about things in a broader sense.
So the story started to really kind of the genesis began in high school.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And then during the civil rights movement, you were what, a teenager or a young adult?
Yeah, well,
try not to age you, your author.
No, it's okay. That's fine. No, born 1943, but when things really started, you know, with the Brown school decision was in 1954. That's when I started really hearing people talk about it.
Okay,
my parents, you know, were strong integrationists and in favor of all that. So I heard that from them, but all around me, from the white people I associated with, I heard the opposite. Mm. So there was all that sort of conflict going on. But then, you know, things really started going in the 60s with Martin Luther King and all of that. And a lot of that happened in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Klan was active and people were getting, you know, killed. And it was, I mean, even for me, I'm white, of course. Even for me, it was frightening. Mm-hmm. And I cannot, you know, imagine how much it was a reign of terror for people of color. So that had a real formative effect on my thinking and outlook on life.
Oh yeah, I can imagine. So
I think that's why that story kept going. It was a story that involved personal stuff with me, and that's why I kept turning it over and over in my mind,
mm-hmm.
working on it, trying to understand it. You know, trying to think of myself in a different way.
Yeah. And so it was happening in your mind, you're kind of formulating it slowly in your mind. When did you actually begin to write some of this stuff down?
Let's see. I guess I wrote a couple of things before I actually started that novel, and those were not very good, to say the least. And this one, I guess it would have been early, maybe late 1990s, early 2000, when I really started to think about that novel. And I think I took a class workshop with a woman in Durham, terrific writer, teacher named Georgianne Eubanks.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "This is the most authentic thing you've written. Mm-hmm. I remember her using that term. This is the most authentic. So I stuck with it then and didn't finish drafts of it. I think I left it, went back, left it, went back, you know, and finally got it done 2010 or 2011.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask, because starting off with some apprehension about writing and then going from there to actually writing a novel, that's a huge jump. And I'm glad that you mentioned that you took the workshop, because I think a lot of young writers, beginning writers, kind of overlook some of the resources out there to, you know, to help them get started and to have, because this is your first novel, won a few prizes, right?
It was finalist for, I was always a finalist for something, not getting it. Then it finally won the Alabama Authors Award for 2013, I guess.
Yeah, that's just quite an achievement, you know, to go from like self-doubt to a finalist in a writing.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, that was an affirmation I needed at that point.
Oh, for sure.
The point about the writing workshops, I took a lot of those, and some of them were terrific, very helpful. I mean, you know, real professional writers, well-known writers sometimes, giving you advice on your work and saying, "You got something here, keep going." It's hugely important. And I was always a member of at least one writing group where I shared work with other people and critiqued theirs. And that was hugely helpful, because not only were you getting good criticism and feedback, but writing, as you know, can be lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And being with other people who are writing and meeting with them really was sort of a community that helped me a lot just to get through what I was doing day to day.
Yeah, a lot of authors that I've spoken with, they always mention how they're either part of some type of critique group or they have a writing partner that they work with, not only for the support, but just to hold them accountable to actually writing consistently.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then what you said you published Leaving Talusca in what year, 2010?
I think it was actually came out 2012 by the time we got it actually done and in print. Yes.
And so that was obviously a success. Did that give you the motivation, the encouragement to start another book, or did you already have this other, the Last First Kiss? Was that something already kind of spinning in your head prior to your finishing this first book?
Well, before I finished Leaving Tuscaloosa, I guess after I finished what I thought was a finished draft of it, I started another much longer novel, sort of a Civil War era novel. Mm-hmm. Then I set that aside, do all the editing with Leaving Tuscaloosa and promotion on that. Then I went back to that novel. And then a couple of years ago, this other one, The Last First Kiss, sort of started to pour out. So I set the big novel aside again and wrote The Last First Kiss. And now I'm back to work on the big Civil War novel again. And it's been through, must be 25 or 30 drafts by now. It's tough one for me.
Yeah.
But so that's how that came about. It was not any sort of linear progression. It was sort of jumping back and forth and grabbing what was coming at the time.
And Walter, when do you write? Are you an early morning writer, or do you just like write a little bit throughout the day, or more of an evening writer? How does that work for you?
When it works, it's I get up in the morning and have breakfast, read some paper or read something to get me sort of into words, sometimes poetry, and sit down and try to write for about 3 hours. And on a good day, I can do that. And that, so maybe get to work by 9:30, 10, work through the early afternoon, and then go do other things. Sometimes, if I'm lucky, I can get back to it at night. In the late evening, like 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that, it's like the day has settled and I can, you know, put my landing gear down and think about writing again. So that's a really good day if that happens. So that's sort of it. And I, you know, when I'm really working on something, I work every day. I mean, I you know, through weekends, unless there's some special reason to take off.
Yeah. That's pretty, so it sounds like you're a consistent writer.
I am, and I have to be if I'm going to get it done, because if I leave it for too long, things start to fade.
Yeah.
And I have to really spend a lot of time getting back into it.
Yeah. So Walter, how did you learn? So after you published your first book, and the reception was pretty positive, very positive. what did you learn about yourself as a writer? Did you see? I mean, obviously there was a lot of growth from the beginning of your writing when you started writing this story, like in your head, right? And then from that to getting it published, did you learn anything else about yourself just as an artist after that first book was published and well received?
Boy, that's a great question. You know, I guess it's when someone says it's a great question, it means I haven't thought of it before. but it is really a good question. I know that I felt that. Well, for one thing, I felt okay. I can do this. I'm doing it now, and I am a writer. Before, it was just sort of trying, you know, and hoping, and Not really sure. That was an affirmation that gave me some, in my head at least, some status as a writer, and mm-hmm. and I guess confidence. Mm-hmm. And so I probably then spent less time doubting what I was doing, second guessing myself, and allowing myself to be more experimental, saying mm-hmm. to myself, okay, you have some talent and you can use that, and you can be more imaginative about how you write, and you can be you don't have to try to find a formula to write to. You can mm-hmm. be more yourself and see what you can come up with. So mm-hmm. I guess confidence, and through the confidence, ability to try to be more creative and rely on my own instincts more. I guess that's a good answer to that. And certainly that was true when I wrote The Last First Kiss. I felt much more competent when I was doing that, and much more like a writer who knew what he was doing mm-hmm. than when I wrote the first novel.
It sounds like, and I think a lot of artists, I don't even think it matters exactly what genre of art you're doing. If you're a writer, photographer, like a painter, whatever. But when you're first starting out or your first project, you kind of play it safe. Like you don't really experiment a lot, as you mentioned. And then once you get that affirmation, you kind of trust your own creativity. And that's what it really sounded like. You began to trust.
You have said it much better and more succinctly than I put it, but that's right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful lesson. That's a very powerful lesson to have learned. And so what advice do you have for young writers starting out who feel a little self-doubt when it comes to writing down a story?
You know, I've heard so much advice from other writers to younger writers. I certainly don't know that I can add anything to that. It's usually stick with it, you know, believe in yourself and so forth and so on. I think all of that is good advice. But I would also say that it's like religion, I guess. Doubt is a part of it. You know, really... doubting and you have to accept that as a part of it and learn to live with it and learn to get through it. I remember hearing Richard Ford, who's a terrific writer, talk about that once, and about how, you know, he had that, even though he went to University of Iowa Writers Workshop and was a star, how he had to work through that all the time when he was starting out as a writer. If he had to do it, then we all got to do it, right? I mean, it's really just part of it, I think. So, you know, I don't know that you can overcome that in the sense that it'll never go away. But if you're a young writer, you need to just recognize that and live with it and keep working.
I think doubt sounds like a very healthy part of it, because if there's no doubt, you just completely, totally, 100% like confident, I know everything, there's no room for growth there, and right. You probably don't know as much as you think you do, and you know, right. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Is that the same advice? So the advice that you just said you would give to younger eyes, is this the same advice you would give to your younger self? If you could talk to that younger version of yourself starting out?
Yeah, I guess so. Although I think that part of my advice for my younger self would be that I needed to have more confidence in what I was doing. And I think maybe sometimes I had too much doubt. I think that, you know, I just needed to, I mean, I wasn't as stupid as I thought I was, I guess, mm-hmm. is kind of the way it's been. If you keep at it and you do have some talent and some insight into writing, you can work things out. There's infinite ways to work out things and solve problems in writing. And you don't have to hit this, usually not an answer. There are all sorts of answers, and you just have to find one that works.
Yeah. And I bet, Walter, is because you've experienced so much, I mean, you've lived through the civil rights movement, through many different decades with different technologies. Being a writer in like the 1990s, how is that different than being a writer in like, you know, 2020? Has technology, has that really influenced the way and how you write and your research, and has it made things easier for you, or do you feel it's more cumbersome?
That's another good question. It certainly made it easier in the sense, I mean, with word processing, I don't know if I would have done what I've done if I had to write down every draft or type out every draft and, you know, go back through it. Yeah. So word processing is a huge change that benefited me. The technology, I'm nervous about technology and not very good at it. So I don't, when I get to that, like having this Zoom meeting with you, I was anxious about this. Is this going to really work when I punch that button? am I going to see her is it all going to work? So there's that sort of nervousness about it. But, you know, I think technology has made writing hugely much easier for a lot of people, everybody, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can remember when I was in high school, I had my parents bought me a word processor, and I just thought that was like the best thing. Because when I graduated from high school, Walter, that was when they were just bringing like the internet into my high school. So, I mean, I still had to go to the library and use encyclopedias and the Dewey Decimal System and all that stuff. But even myself as a younger person, I can say writing now in 2020 was much more easier than writing in 1995. Just the access of information and how quickly I can write things, jot things down, and save things. And it's just, it's amazing.
So yeah, I get to this other Civil War novel I'm writing. There's so much factual history that I need to know, so I can go to, you know, Wikipedia or something, look out what the women's dresses were like back then, what the fabrics were, and so forth.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, gosh, that would have taken, I'd have to go to the library and go through the Dewey Decimal System. Yes. If I'd been 25 years ago. So yeah, that kind of thing is hugely helpful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And also, you know what else, Walter? Being able to talk to other writers via like meetings like this or Facebook or whatever, I mean, social media has helped a lot. Writers groups are now more accessible.
Yes.
So yeah, that's a big help too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Walter, this has been a fun conversation. You have such an interesting background, interesting story. I'm so glad I had this opportunity to talk to you. Tell us where we can find you online.
Well, you can go to my website, which is www.walterbennettauthor.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll tell you most of what goes on with me right now. Mm-hmm. I've enjoyed this terrifically. I really appreciate it. You're a great interviewer.
Oh, thank you. You're a fabulous guest, Walter. And having said that, I'm just going to stop recording, but I'm just going to chat with you for a moment.
That was a delightful conversation with Walter. I am so happy that I had the opportunity to interview him. I think it's funny that we were both nervous about the interview for different reasons. I was nervous to be interviewing a former judge, and he was nervous about using technology to conduct the interview. But it worked out wonderfully because the conversation was very inspiring and enlightening. I particularly appreciate being reminded that we are always surrounded by stories. So there's always material that we can draw and pull from to create our own story. If you are interested in learning more about Walter and his books, you can visit his website in the show notes and, of course, read his books. In the meantime, you can also visit zazo.com and sign up for my newsletter, and you can follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter @EbonyHaywood and Instagram and Facebook at Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you next time when I talk to another fabulous guest. Bye-bye.